Okay, if you're ready, the next case is 09-1378, captioned the General Protect Group against the International Trade Commission. And Mr. Long, you've revised the schedule? Okay, Mr. Chen.
Mr. May. Oh. Representing Tran Mong.
Of course, Mr. May.
Good morning, Your Honors. May please court. Tran Mong's appeal centers on one question, whether the term load terminals, as claimed in the 340 patent, includes receptacle outlets. Now, receptacle outlets have been referred to as user load terminals, user accessible load terminals, or receptacle terminals, but not as the claimed load terminals.
Are they referred to in the patent as user load terminals?
Not in the 340 patent specifically, but in the related patent, 386 patent, that has two common inventors and derived from the same patent application. The inventors defined user load terminals as receptacle outlets.
But it's not in this patent.
Not in the 340 patent. So the commission suggested that the name user load terminals suggests user load terminals are a type of load terminals. However, just as guinea pigs are not pigs, seahorses are not horses, Tran Mong urges this court to look past linguistic similarities.
I'm confused. Why you seem to be conceding that the term user load terminals has some significance here when it doesn't appear in the 340 patent?
Your Honor, it's Tran Mong's position that we are not conceding that term. But however, at the commission level, it appears the commission decision is based on the linguistic similarities. That's the reason we, in our brief, we...
I would have thought your argument was we should look at the 340 patent and limit ourselves since we're trying to figure out what the claims in the 340 patent mean.
I mean, you know...
No?
Obviously, I mean, we can limit the intrinsic evidence to the 340 patent. However, because the 340 patent itself does not define, does not equip receptacle outlets to user load terminals, if the court ends inquiry here, that's fine. However, at the commission level, the issue has been raised that receptacle outlets has also been referred to as user load terminals. So it is translated.
In another patent.
In another patent. So, yeah, I agree with Your Honor. Not once does the 340 patent ever refer receptacle outlets as user load as load terminals.
Why isn't it fairly construed that load terminals, that receptacle outlets are just a type of load terminal?
No, exactly. I mean, that's the reason we want to look based on the case law of Philips v. AWH Corporation. So we are looking to intrinsic evidence,
right,
and if needed, extrinsic evidence. So it's Tran's position, nothing in the intrinsic evidence those two patents or 340 patent never refer to receptacle outlets as load terminals. So there's no evidence, all the drawing specification never mentioned receptacle outlets as load terminals.
The problem is this, that in general usage, a receptacle outlet could be called a load terminal, right?
No. We disagree. In the general usage, the issue has been raised based on 386 patent. Receptacle outlets can be called as user load terminals, but
I'm talking about general usage. I'm not, forget about these patents. I thought there was, and correct me if I'm mistaken about that, I thought there was expert testimony that in the field that receptacle outlets would be known as load terminals. Is that correct?
With all due respect, we disagree with that characterization.
But is there not expert testimony to that effect?
There was nothing in the record below ever equate.
Was there expert testimony that receptacle outlets are referred to in the field as load terminals?
Okay, let's take a look.
Was there such testimony? Yes.
No.
There was no such testimony.
Experts and witnesses have been very careful at the trial in referring to receptacle outlets as user load terminals or user accessible load terminals. Not once did any witness specifically refer to receptacle outlets as load terminals. So that's what we want to highlight, that if the court looked past linguistic similarities and looked into intrinsic evidence, all the drawings and nothing in the specification equate receptacle outlets to load terminals. And rather, they clearly label receptacle outlets as distinct and separate components from load terminals. And that's, I know my time's up, but let me just highlight expert testimony. Dr. Harmon testified, not in connection with 340 patent, but in connection with 386 patent. He said, quote, this is from Joint Appendix 40408, at page 892, lines 15 through 18. Dr. Harmon testified, quote, load terminals would be the terminals for any devices or outlets or appliances that would be connected to the GFCI device, to the device, end quote. The device meaning GFCI device. So even here, Dr. Harmon said, load terminals are the terminals for outlets, receptacle outlets, to be connected to the GFCI device. So he himself clearly distinguished receptacle outlets as distinct and separate components from the load terminals.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. May. Okay, Mr. Long.
Sorry for the confusion about the order.
Yeah.
Again, I'm counsel for General Protect, and in this part of the appeal, General Protect as an appellant. I'm going to focus on non-infringement of the 340 patent. And the 340 patent is one of the patents that provides for miswiring protection. So there are two issues. One is the claim construction issue. The detection circuit requires, it must be capable of, quote, detecting a proper wiring condition, detecting a proper wiring condition. And the other issue is, does GPG's device have a circuit that's capable of detecting a proper wiring condition?
So now, so just to be clear, do you take issue with the claim construction or simply on the infringement issue?
The claim construction, we take issue with application of the words that were used. So
So whether it infringes based on the claim construction. So you're not challenging the claim construction.
Well, I guess it means what does detecting mean?
Isn't your argument that the claim construction was elaborated when the infringement issue was considered, so we have a claim construction which goes beyond the initial one?
Yes. So detecting, we don't have issue with the word detecting. But the way the claim is applied, he didn't actually require a circuit to detect. And detect requires a circuit to distinguish between proper wiring and improper wiring. The way the claim is applied, it was just a one way. So let me give us a clear example. Let's say there's a microphone here, and it sends a signal to the speaker. Say it's a female voice detector. Is this microphone a female voice detector? Well, no, it sends a signal for a male voice or a female voice. But the court below said, well, this sends a signal on a female voice, therefore it's a female voice detector. Now, the way GPG's device works, what if we put a guard on the door back here, and we don't let anybody come to the courtroom but females? Well, now they would say, well, only females can come into the room, so now this microphone is a female voice detector. Well, it's not. It's the same microphone that was always there. The way GPG's product worked is, the miswiring protection in GPG's product.
The signal here is the AC current, right?
I'm sorry?
The signal is the AC current.
The signal that is sent in the claim?
Yeah, no, in the accused device.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what they say is the signal, but
it has to be the AC current, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's AC current. Yes, if I understand the question. But the way GPG's device works is, when the interrupting contact...
Is your point that the AC current doesn't distinguish between proper and improper wiring?
No, that's not it at all.
That's not it?
It is that we don't have a circuit that can distinguish. It cannot physically distinguish. And our real argument is that there is absolutely no evidence below of a circuit that can distinguish. They just say it works when there's correct lying, but they want the court to look away on what happens when there's incorrect lying. And you have to consider how the circuit works on incorrect lying, or you can't show that it's the detection circuit. And there is absolutely no evidence below. There was never even the accusation that the circuit could tell the difference between proper and improper lying. As the patent, the circuit in the patent can tell the difference. And it inhibits device operation on improper lying. The accused circuitry in GPG's device can't do that. It can't. It's completely isolated from miswired circuit, from the miswired circuit when it's tripped and the contacts are open. The alleged detection circuit is not doing anything. When the contacts are closed and reset and it's miswired, the accused detection circuit senses the miswiring, but it allows the device to operate just as if it were properly wired. So this accused detection circuit is not doing what the patent says.
Let me see if I can understand it. In the accused device, the if it's miswired, the AC current does not burn out the solenoid. Am I correct about that?
It's miswired, yes. In the patent, when it's miswired, it trips and does not burn out.
Right. And what happens in the accused device?
In the accused device, the patent, the miswired circuit trips on miswired. In the accused device, the accused circuit doesn't do anything. It's completely isolated from power. It doesn't do anything.
And how does it protect against miswiring?
It doesn't. That's the whole point. We do not have a circuit that protects against wiring. We protect against wiring using the interrupting contacts. We separate all the circuitry on one side of the interrupting contacts. So when the power is miswired, everything's dead. We don't need circuitry to protect. Now, in the reset state, we don't have this wiring protection.
You mean if the current is coming in through the load terminals, it doesn't operate to reset?
In the trip state, everything's dead.
Yeah.
In the reset state, it allows it to operate, even if it's miswired.
Yeah, well, in the trip state, it won't allow you to reset because there's no power to do it.
Right. That would be just everything that's just dead. Now, we've added, and I see my time is up.
It is.
Thank you.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Long. Okay,
Mr.
Chen.
Again, Shanghai ELE has taken issues with regard to the 398 patent and the 340 patent. With regard to the 398 patent, we think the commission did not construe the unitary electrically conducting member correctly, because we urge the construction to include the physical nature of the single unitary conducting member to be in the nature of a bus bar. Therefore, it does not cover prior art type, cantilever type of conducting member. In the prior art, there is cantilever type of conducting member where the conducting member is connected on the line side and is movable on the load side. So it's like an arm moving up and down like this. But on one side, on the line side, on the hub side, it's always connected. Only on the load side is movable.
But is that the distinction you're drawing, or the distinction that was drawn by which you say it is of the nature of a bus bar?
That's right. The nature of a bus bar is the line side and load side both making and breaking. You have to have a supporting member to move it up and down. Now, in the prosecution history, the 398 patent claim with that particular regard was rejected based on prior art on that point, because the prior art showed a cantilever type of conducting member. Now, the applicant, in order to get allowance, said, no, we have a conducting member in the nature of a bus bar. So the question is whether the construction now covers both the, as the commission did, cover both the bus bar and the prior cantilever member. Shanghai ELE's device follows the prior art cantilever member. kind of a configuration. And in that configuration, you do not need a support a mounting member. So that's why we take issue on both the construction of the unitary conducting member and also the mounting member of the 398 patent. Now, with regard to the 340 patent, we believe the we support and agree with the argument made with regard to the detecting circuit made by GPG. But additional point on claim 14 of the 340 patent that requires a predetermined signal. Now, in the trial, the expert agreed. We have expert testifying that in Shanghai ELE's device, there is no predetermined signal. And as a matter of fact, even Pat Seymour's expert agreed, Dr. Harman testified that in claim 14 of the 340 patent, the predetermined signal is used to differentiate whether or not there is correct wiring. So the predetermined signal has a function that differentiate between correct wiring and incorrect wiring. So it's not any signal. It's not a just AC current coming from the hot that can be construed as the predetermined signal. The AC current coming from the hot is the AC current. It is not a predetermined signal to differentiate the wiring state. So that is our argument. That's why we say the 340 patent, in that we did not take the Shanghai ELE's product does not have a predetermined signal to satisfy that particular limitation of claim 14.
I understand the argument, and I was originally asking a GPG lawyer as to whether they were making that argument. Is there a difference between the two of you on that? That you're making the predetermined signal argument. You're saying the AC current is not a predetermined signal, correct?
Yes, we're making.
But they're not. That doesn't help them.
Well, with regard to the detection, we concur with their analysis and argument. We make a further argument that the predetermined signal in claim 14.
No, but I understand. But what I'm not understanding is the predetermined signal argument doesn't help them avoid infringement. Is that the situation? Is that why you're making the argument and they're not?
With regard to how their product works, we only argue on our side about
Thank you, Mr. Chen. Okay, Mr. Barkowski, you're next for the appellee.
Good morning again, may I please the court. I submit that what we have here is a mirror image of what we had in the appeal we argued earlier. And that's specifically true with respect to the detection limitation.
Well, I think that there's a real issue about the detection circuit. And, you know, to talk about mirror images is probably not too helpful. As I understand, there are two arguments about the detection circuit. Could you address those?
Yeah, absolutely. This claim 14 of the 340 patent claims a detection circuit configured to generate a predetermined signal in response to detecting proper wire.
Okay, so why is an AC current a predetermined signal? What's predetermined about the AC current?
There's not a specific definition of predetermined, but in an electrical device, the way these things work is, in order to detect, do you have proper wire? Do you have wire to the right side of the device, the line side? What the device does is it detects, is that power on the right side? And sure enough, what does it detect?
But the signal doesn't have any information in it. It's just an AC current, right?
It's AC current to the correct side. And this is the important distinction. In the tripped state of these devices, they do indeed detect, is there proper wire, is the power to the correct side of the device, or is it incorrect?
So the AC current doesn't tell you anything about whether it's proper wiring or not. The signal itself doesn't tell you anything, right?
It does though, Your Honor. The existence of wiring going to the circuit, flowing through it in the way that
everything. I mean, so you're saying it's a predetermined signal because if it's there, it's one thing. If it's not there, it's the other.
Basically so. That's how the device detects, is the wiring to the right side? It distinguishes between the two. And specifically, and this is important, Your Honor, in the tripped state of the device, which is what this claim contemplates, because it uses the predetermined signal to substantially prevent the device from affecting the reset state.
Suppose we were to rule against you on predetermined signal. Does that affect GPG or only ELE?
Regarding predetermined signal, ELE is the only appellant on this side of the bill that makes that argument. They argue that it needs to have a preset value. Now, I'd like to take that point just one step further, Your Honor. There's nothing in the patent that says that it needs to be.
Suppose we say, okay, we disagree with you. Predetermined signal, AC current's not a predetermined signal. Does that affect both GPG, from your point of view, as well as ELE or not?
Only ELE appealed that issue, and I presume.
Well, they appealed the issue about whether this claim limitation is satisfied. They may make a different argument. Is there any reason, is there anything about the device that makes a difference under that construction of predetermined signal?
Both of them detect the AC path.
Is there any difference between the two devices from that point of view? I'm assuming we rule against you. Just hypothetically, on predetermined signals, does that mean the GPG device doesn't infringe?
Your Honor, it's just not a question that the Commission has answered or analyzed because it's not presented to us. And I know I'm trying to answer your question. They both do operate in a similar way, and that is detecting whether the power, they isolate the low side, and they detect whether the power is to the right side. And if they don't detect that, the device is prevented from affecting the reset state, just as is called for in the claim. If they do detect it, they send the signal we have received, that it has received proper wiring, it detects it, and sure enough, it allows the device to be reset, knowing that the power is on the proper side. The reset lockout devices, as we discussed in the earlier case. Turning to the argument that Tremona makes about load terminals,
Is that a claim construction question or infringement question, whether or not load terminals include user load terminals?
It was addressed in the claim construction section. It was raised as somewhat of a tangential issue below. It was addressed in the claim construction portion of the ALJ's ID, and that was not reviewed by the Commission. So that is where it's addressed.
So why, given the use of the terms in the 386 patent, shouldn't that distinct use be persuasive evidence in how we're going to construe that here in the 3.4?
Well, the separate uses of the two terms, user load terminals and load terminals, in the 386 patent, I think it's of a somewhat limited value with respect to the sibling patent, the 3.4. But even with that said, if you look at it and if it was absolutely determinative, all that means is that user load terminals are naturally a subset of load terminals. And that's consistent with the testimony that Mr. May informed you of by Dr. Harmon, and that's that the user load terminals, the receptacle outlets, are terminals. They accommodate a load, and that load is plugged in by the user. They're naturally load terminals. The question
of the problem that I see is that in the 3.4 patent, there isn't any reference to load terminals or user load terminals that includes receptacle outlets, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, and that's why it's basically the judge tried to figure out what does this term mean in the art, and who did he ask?
Well, it's not just mean in the art. The first thing we want to find out is what it means from the point of view of the intrinsic evidence, and the intrinsic evidence doesn't suggest that the term load terminals includes receptacle outlets, does it?
It does, and that's somewhat what I was just saying, in that receptacles are terminals, and they accommodate loads.
I'm talking about what the patent says about it. I'm not talking about what the testimony was.
Right.
I'm looking first at the patent. I looked at the 3.4 patent. I don't see anything in the specification that tells me that a receptacle outlet is encompassed within the term load terminals. Is there anything in there that suggests that?
It's basically silent tester. It refers to them separately, which, as I just said, that it certainly implies they have a different scope, but it doesn't render them mutually exclusive. So what the ALJ did was, he heard testimony from the art, He looked to the 386 patent, and he determined, you know, I'd like to point out, too, there's an absence of testimony that user load terminal is not a load terminal, which I think is the more natural definition. I think that's why they're basically arguing for a specific definition. There is testimony.
How do we know? Okay, you're going to tell us what the testimony is so we know why that's what you call a natural definition?
Well, the testimony was, and the ALJ found this, it's cited in our brief at page 42, I believe. And the testimony was load terminals would be the terminals for any devices or outlets or appliances that would be connected. In other words, that he's saying that they're terminals and that they accommodate the load. The load there would be the appliance.
Yeah. But was there testimony that in the field that people use the phrase load terminals to refer to receptacle outlets? I mean, you know, I don't attribute a lot of significance to expert testimony that says, well, if you take this piece and you combine it with this piece, it means this, and I've studied it, and here's my view. I want to know, is the terminology load terminals used in the art to refer to receptacle outlets? Is there such testimony?
I think the clearest testimony is what I said. Did somebody say exactly what you said? Not that I'm aware. I mean, never seen that, but I don't think so. I think that the testimony was that, yes, these are terminals. They're accessed by downstream devices, which are loads, and appliances, and hair dryers, and such.
So it's not a term of art in the industry.
It has meaning in the industry. A receptacle has meaning, and the understanding...
No, load terminal. Did somebody testify, this is a term of art, in the industry, you know, hear textbooks, hear things, this is what it means.
Basically not. What the expert testified to was that receptacles would be considered load terminals.
Because?
Because they're terminals that accommodate the loads, and those loads would be the appliances, or downstream devices, which would be the downstream load terminals. But what we have is an absolute absence of testimony that those load terminals accessed by a user, are not load terminals. And that's what I think...
Well, that doesn't help very much.
Well, it does if you take that they acknowledge that a user, that these things are properly referred to in the...
I mean, you've told me that this is not a phrase that anyone identified as being used in the art. So I don't get much help out of the expert testimony. Then I look at the patent and I don't see any usage in the patent that suggests that load terminals include receptacle outlets. You've got a problem.
In the 386 patent, it refers to receptacles as user
340.
It refers them separately as receptacles and load terminals.
So that doesn't help you.
It doesn't help, and it doesn't necessarily hurt your...
I know, but I think Judge Dyke was looking for help for your side.
I would look to the expert testimony. I would look to just the natural meaning of the words of load terminals and user load terminals, and I would really look to their argument. They had the advice of people in the art from their client and people and experts in the art, and notably absent is anybody saying we don't consider user load terminals to be load terminals. I see that I'm out of time.
Any more? Mr. Abate is full time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address the four sets of interrupting contacts first, and I want to address a question about how people understood this in the art. We do have expert testimony that was mentioned. Dr. Harmon said that outlets can be called load terminals. But in addition, there was a fact witness from our company who's a person who worked in the field many years. And what did he say? He said that outlets are a type of load terminal. That's at page A40378 in the appendix, Mr. Ostenbrock. We also have...
What page?
A40378. It's transcript page 779 to 780. But Your Honor, another thing you should look at, this idea of what's the understanding of the art, I suggest to you to look at the 398 patent. And the reason why the 398 is relevant, it was filed 6 years prior to the 340. And what does it say? It calls the terminals on the face of the device load terminals. Doesn't call them user load terminals. Calls the terminals on the face of the device load terminals. This is the 398 patent. It's page A403. and that's in column 6, line 27 through 45. And it's referring to figure 11, and the reference numerals there are the load terminal of 92 and 94. They call the face of the terminal load terminals, not user load, just load terminals. So in addition to the testimony, we have the 398 patent. Now, we could turn to the intrinsic evidence. And the intrinsic evidence is, first, the DeSalvo art of record. That the art of record is an intrinsic evidence, and it calls the terminals in the face of the device user load terminals. That's a type of load terminal we would submit. In addition, I would point to the 340 patent itself. Now, we did point to one reference in column 1 where the outlets on the front were talked about handling loads. I mean, these are electrical devices. What a terminal is, an electrical device...
I want to bring you back to 40378. This testimony doesn't seem to me talks about how the word, how the phrase load terminals is used in the art. He says, we differentiate by calling them load terminals. That's not, to me, that's not clear that he's referring to the usage in the art as opposed to how he's using the term in his testimony.
Oh, Your Honor, he was the Vice President of Engineering at Passman Seymour.
Well, so I suggest to you. Where does he say that this has a meaning in the art? As he says, we call them load terminals. Well,
we at Passman Seymour call them load terminals.
Well, maybe for the purposes of this case, we call them that. I don't know what he was saying.
Well, no, Your Honor, he's talking about the G4 product. That's a product that was in the case. It was one of our domestic industry products. It's a Passman Seymour product. And he says, the load terminals, the screw terminals, and the face terminals were one piece. What does that mean? That's what's shown in the 398 patent. The screw terminal on the back and the terminals on the face of the device were one solid piece of metal, and he calls it a load terminal. In the G4 product, which is it's a product in the case, he's talking about how P&S, he's the Vice President of Engineering, how does P&S refer to this term? So that's a person of skill in the art talking about that, in addition to expert testimony. But I would say look at the 398 patent as well. It's clear as a bell. It calls the terminals on the face load terminals. And it's actually showing the very type of load terminal he's talking about. It's the G4 load terminal that he's talking about here. You know, the 386 patent, a couple things to mention about that. First, that's an extrinsic evidence. It is part of the same family of patents, but it's a continuation of part of the family, and the disclosure they rely on is extrinsic. Now, I would say it supports us. It calls the terminals on the face user load terminals. So I say it supports us, but nonetheless, it's not intrinsic evidence. The intrinsic evidence in the 340 patent, I mentioned column 1, but I'd also refer you to the top of columns 2 and column 4. They talk generally about the line and load side of the device, and you can see this in the 340 patent in figure 4. The line and load side of the device are referred to generically. So don't think that receptacles are always broken out as something different. In fact, in figure 4, the load side of the device is referred to generically, and that includes both the load terminals in the back of the device and the load terminal on the face of the device. And then you'll see that at the top of columns 2 and 4 as well.
Is anybody going to talk about the mounting means issue and the latching means issue in the 398 patent?
I can. I would like to address the detection issue also. If you'd like me to start on other issues, I will.
Well, you can go ahead and do that, but I'd like to ask questions about that because I don't want to... Nobody else is going to talk about that, right? That's it.
I mean, respondents didn't raise it, so... I wasn't going to raise it if they...
Well, I don't care whether they raised it or not.
Sure.
My ability to understand this has nothing to do with whether they raised it.
Let's talk about the detection means, and then we'll answer Judge Dyke's questions about the mounting means.
Thank you, Judge Newman. So, in detection, GPG is doing the same thing here that they did at the commission. They're ignoring how the product works in normal operation. When the product comes out of the box, it's in the trip state. When you install it properly, there's a signal that detects the proper wiring that allows you to reset the device. If you take it out of the box and you miswire it, you install it improperly, you don't get that signal. That's the normal operation of the device. That's what the instructions say. That's how people use the device. And the ALJ made a specific finding that the operations that they're talking about in their reply brief with the green lines they're showing, is an abnormal operation of the device. It's abnormal in a number of ways because it involves putting the device in the wall, taking it out, putting it back in, miswired. It involves keeping it in the reset state while you're doing all that. And third, it involves actually pushing the reset button after you do all that, just to get the signal that he's trying to show. The judge made a specific finding, a fact finding that's supported by substantial evidence that this is an abnormal operation. Now, Mr. Long is referring to the testimony of GPG's expert at the trial, Dr. Roberg. Dr. Roberg's testimony was explicitly rejected, and it was rejected because he didn't know the devices were sold in the trip state. There was a critical fact that was denied to him. This is how the devices are sold. This is how they're used in normal operation. He didn't know that. When confronted with the fact that the devices are sold in the trip state, he had to admit, and he did, that the operation he was proposing was abnormal. He talked about maybe his grandchildren might do something and fiddle around with the device in a certain way. But what they've done to the device to show the signal that he has in his reply brief is actually what's abnormal about it. They disable the miswiring protection such that if a person were to use that device, they would get electrocuted if there was a ground fault. It's affirmatively not the invention because they're disabling the device in its intended, the intended use of the device. And there's specific testimony that this is a misuse of the device, that it would be a violation of the electrical code, that it would be a violation of the standard, and the patents aren't directed to violations of standards. Now, the ALJ made this, as I said, a specific finding. I didn't mention this. He made a specific finding that they didn't establish that this operation occurred, and that's important for two reasons. One, it shows that the operation is abnormal. It's not how you normally use the device. But two, it shows that the signal that Mr. Long traces in his reply brief, there's no evidence to support that signal ever existed. There's no evidence. The judge rejected that. That they never established that this device ever was manipulated in this way. They never established that signal was created. And that's a fact finding. The normal and intended use of this device infringes, and they cannot avoid infringement by pointing to some abnormal scenario. That's what the Goldenblatt case says. It was an apparatus claim in that case, and the infringement
said...
That's
not their only argument, right?
I'm sorry?
That's not their only argument.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. That's not their only argument, but it's an important argument. They're relying on an abnormal operation, and the Hillgrave case supports us on that, that testing results that defeat, that trying to defeat the invention are not... significant. They're not relevant.
Can we get to mounting means now and latching means?
Well, Your Honor, there's one other aspect of the detection circuit I'd like to address, and that was the issue of circuit itself and AC wiring. AC power. I would point out that the predetermined nature of the signal is that you design it. You design the circuit so that current flows through it when you have proper wiring. That's how these devices are designed. This is not happenstance, as Mr. Long is making it appear to be. This circuit is designed for a particular use, and that is to sense when the line terminals are connected to AC power. The signal is predetermined based on the circuit design, and the judge actually found, he stated what a predetermined signal would be. He said detection is well understood in the context of circuits to be a circuit responds to a particular stimulus in a particular way. This is not a human notion of detection. It's a circuit. This is a circuit designed for a particular purpose, and when you get the current through it, that's the predetermined signal. The circuit performs detection.
Okay,
by
let's go to mounting means now,
okay.
And latching means,
okay.
All right?
Okay.
On the latching means, the question is whether operation by magnetism is the same way for equivalence purposes as a mechanical operation. And that strikes me as a serious question as to whether it is the same way. Right? That's the question, right?
I would phrase the question a little differently, but if that's your question, I can answer it.
Okay.
In other words, you're saying what the issue is?
Yeah, the issue is whether it's the same way when it works by magnetism as opposed to mechanically.
There's one issue as to whether it's the same way, but I wouldn't phrase it as magnetism versus mechanical. The case law establishes that when analyzing equivalence, you look to the assembly of parts. You don't analyze a component by component. but you're looking to the assembly of parts.
Well, I don't understand. The question is whether magnetism and mechanical is the same way. You say in this context it is, right?
We say it is. That's right. We say that it is in this context.
Why should it be?
I would suggest to you that the question is not so narrow about magnetism versus mechanical. It's about whether the assembly of parts performs the function of a latching means, which is retaining, releasably retaining. The reason why it's the same, Your Honor, is if you look at the description in the 398 patent, they talk about the latch retaining the conducting member in the closed position, overcoming a biasing force exerted by a coil spring, pushing away. And that's exactly how GPG has patents that describe its product, and it was established in the record that these patents actually establish it, show how its product work. Their patents describe the retaining function in exactly the same way, that the permanent magnet applies a force to overcome a coil spring pushing away. Is one force overcoming another? The judge made a specific fact finding on this on page 155 and 6, A 155 and 6, and this is a question of fact. It's a question of equivalence, a question of infringement. It's a question of fact, and I would suggest to you that that fact finding is supported by substantial evidence in the GPG patent versus the 398 patent, how this is described. In addition, we have expert testimony describing how the products work, but also expert testimony of our expert, GPG's expert, and another respondent's expert, all saying that magnetic latches were well known in the electrical device industry and specifically well known in the GFCI art. And we have two patents that show a latching structure, prior art patents, nearly identical.
Well, that may actually cut against you in the sense that if it was well known, why wasn't it described in the patent? It sounds as though you're trying to, maybe under those circumstances, we shouldn't treat it as equivalent if it was well known and not described.
The question with doctrine of equivalence versus means plus function equivalence differs in this regard. In doctrine of equivalence, what you say would apply. But in means plus function equivalence, the fact that something was in the prior art shows that it wasn't equivalent. That's how you analyze means plus function equivalence. You look backward. Doctrine of equivalence, the law is as you described, that if it's something you could have claimed, we're not going to give you the benefit of the doctrine of equivalence. But when you're talking means plus function equivalence, it is okay to look backwards to see what people used in the art. And of course, we point out that this shows that this is interchangeable. And, you know, remember, in this art, the judge found a level of skill on page A108, a fairly high level of skill, BS and EE plus
okay, let's shift over to mounting means.
Okay.
So, if mounting means requires support, the support isn't provided in the infringing device, right?
No, Your Honor, that's not correct.
Not true?
Not
okay,
true.
Why is that not
the,
true?
This is the ELE product. It has an outstanding plastic arm, and it has that extends from the mounting beams. It's a plastic block with an outstanding arm. And the cantilever arm, which is the electrically conducting member, rides up and down with the plastic block. And in that way, it's mounted. And again, this is a question of fact.
But they're not attached, right?
They're not attached. But they're not attached in the patent either. It rests on top. And in fact, there is an embodiment that a bus bar formed inwardly with a leaf spring. And that embodiment is a cantilever arm. So in the patent, it's not attached, it rests on top, and that's exactly what happens here, is that the cantilever arm rides up and down with this plastic arm under it. It's resting on the arm, and the arm guides it to the closed position and to the open position. And again, it's a question of fact about the mounting means. It's not a question of construction. One last point on the detection circuit I'd like to make is that what I want to put one more time about the issue of the circuit that is being traced in the reply brief. What they're positing in that situation is actually tricking the circuit into showing a signal when it would not otherwise provide such a signal. In other words, they're manipulating the device and pushing the reset button and all they have to do to try to show the same signal. But it doesn't change the nature of the circuit. That circuit is a circuit that detects proper wiring. And I'll give you one illustration. If you were to take that device out of the wall, even after all he did to it to create that signal, and you trip the device, and you put it back in the wall properly wired, you would get the proper wiring signal that allows you to reset the device. So it shows that the nature of the circuit hasn't changed, irrespective of what they've tried to do to it and the way they've manipulated it. And as I suggest to you, Your Honor, It's not a fair representation of the circuit the way it's being represented here. The same thing happened at trial. The ALJ saw through it when the expert admitted that he didn't really understand how the product was working. If there are no further questions, I'm happy to sit down.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Rubin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. We'll hear some rebuttal, and if there are additional points that have been raised in the questioning that you need to cover, please take them up. Okay, Mr. May.
Your Honors, not once does the 340 patent refer to receptacle outlets as low terminals. Now, regarding witness testimonies, not once did any witness testify that receptacle outlets are low terminals. They were very careful in referring to receptacle outlets as user load terminals or user accessible load terminals. Now, if receptacle outlets are not referred to as user load terminals, we probably wouldn't be here today. The commission probably would never rule that kind of construction to include receptacle outlets. So the real question of this appeal is the linguistic similarity. So just as guinea pigs are not pigs, seahorses are not horses, we ask this court to look past linguistic similarities. Now let me just emphasize one more point before I sit down. Passing to more cited Mr. Osterbrock, their own witness testimony at Joint Appendix 40378. Now let's start reading from Appendix 40377. The last line of that page, there was a question asked to the witness, by user load terminals, you mean outlets on the DFCI, is that correct? The answer was yes. So if you continue to read the page of Appendix 40378, that witness was very careful in referring to receptacle outlets as user load terminals. I believe another place he said user accessible load terminals. So it's true in the patent, even in the 340 patent, load terminals are connected to receptacle outlets. I think the confusion, so they all eventually connected to load. But in the terminology, even in the way that the witnesses use, they refer to user load terminals connected to user.
I don't know why you keep talking about that, because the term user load terminals is not used in the 340 patent, and I'm not even sure that there's any testimony that user load terminals has an well understood meaning in the art, and they've admitted that load terminals hasn't been identified as having a meaning in the art. So, I mean, you know.
Your Honor, I mean, if the court determines that intrinsic evidence is clear that the claim term load terminals cannot include receptacle outlets, yeah, we can rest the case here. However, if the court doesn't want to get into intrinsic evidence, it's Tremont's position that the witness, that the testimony is not conclusive, and in a way, actually, it's consistent with Tremont's testimony, and Tremont's position that the claim term cannot include receptacle outlets.
Thank you, Mr. May.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Long.
Again, I represent General Protec. First question is, does General Protec's device infringe if you find that the AC circuit, AC signal, cannot be a predetermined signal? The answer is no, we would not infringe. There's no dispute about that. And we didn't take the position that that was the predetermined signal. We haven't taken any position on that. If you change the claim construction so that that is not a predetermined signal, GPG's device does not infringe. So secondly, I want to go back to this detection circuit. And the first thing I'm going to do is correct a false and scandalous remark that was made by Bass and Seymour's comment. And that was that our device will electrocute someone if it's miswired. That's not true. Even when miswired, it provides fault detection. It trips on a fault, but it doesn't provide miswire. It doesn't trip just because it's miswired, but still provides fault detection. The problem with Pass and Seymour's analysis is they're looking at overall operation of the device
But the analysis has to focus on the detection circuit. Is the accused circuit distinguishing between proper and improper wiring? We showed every possible situation, every possible state of that device, including some that he says is never going to happen, but we showed every possibility. It's never distinguishing between proper and improper wiring. And it's their burden of proof. We don't have to disprove it. They have to prove it's distinguishing, and it's not. I know my time is out, but I would like to make one comment that was raised on the 398 on the magnetic, the latching means. If I may make one brief comment about that.
Yes, I think it would help to respond to Judge Light's question on the magnetic mechanical.
If you compare the simple magnetic latch in GPG's device, it's simple, it's just a simple magnet. If you compare that with the invention, with all these complicated mechanical movements, you got a pin coming down and smoothing diagonal, that's like Rube Goldberg. That's a Rube Goldberg invent. We don't do that. It's simple. It's just a magnet. It's not just the fact that it's a magnet. It's got all these moving parts. General Protex is just a magnet, just a permanent magnet. It's not a problem. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lone. Mr. Chin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address Judge Dyke's question about the mounting means in 398 patent. Now, the other side said the supporting is equipment mounting. The 398 patent state differently. In 398 patent, in figure 11, it shows the block 82, which is the mounting means. And particularly at column 1, the line 62 through 64, it states the busbar member are carried in space relation on the movable block. It's carried. Now, this is resting or supporting on arm, but it's not carried or mounted. If you grab it and move it with it, this is carried and mounted, and this is just resting and supporting. So I suggest that the interpretation that supporting is just resting in ELE's cantilever arms, but resting on unmoving block sometimes. But in the 398 patent, it's talking about mounting block 82 carrying. Actually, there's two vertical members which clips the busbar member and carries it up and down with it. That's particularly shown in figure 11 and discussed at column 1, 62 through 64. And also, I'd like to further address Your Honor's concern about predetermined signal. Now, predetermined signal is not just something, any AC current coming into the device. The predetermined signal means something. Both sides expert, Dr. Harmon and Dr. Engel on our side agree, predetermined means something, a preset value that differentiates the wiring state. Now, in 398 patent, there's two places use the word predetermined, which sheds light of how that term, predetermined signal, should be interpreted. At column 2, lines 6 to 7 of the 340 patent, it talks about a predetermined threshold of a differential current. So that's one place where the word predetermined is used. And the second instance in 340 patent is at column 4, line 43 through 46, we're talking about a predetermined value with regard to a predetermined time. So both instances, the predetermined means something, it's a preset value goes with it. It's not just any AC current that goes into the receptacle. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. We've raised some new issues, but I believe everything has been covered. Is there anything else that you need to ask? The case is taken under submission, both cases.